Dotty Radio, where gamers roll.
www.d20radio.com. Playing poker, I'm in the bathroom. I had to make a deposit, and I did a royal flush.
That one might stay in the episode.
Really? Cool.
Even your royal flush.
Oof. That was a hell of a deposit I had to put down, though. But it was a winning hand.
Welcome to the Geeks Menagerie, Episode 9, Looney Tunes Animation.
How are you doing, Craig?
Not too bad. Since we're discussing Looney Tunes today, I think it would be appropriate to start with Bugs Bunny, because he seems to be, not necessarily the central or main characters, but he seems to be the character that most people would associate with Looney Tunes.
Yeah, he's definitely by far the most popular out of all of them.
Yes. Now, I not remember when I started getting into it. It's a mystery. Now, some of the early Bugs Bunny cartoons, Bugs Bunny was started around just before the war, and in a couple of the cartoons, which because of content are no longer available, he was shown to be like the good guy protagonist, if you will. So during the war years, it was a way to the initial cartoons were designed as morale boosters to get people to buy war bonds. Now, one of the first ones of that, Tokyo Jokyo, because it was a little bit racist, is no longer out there. Now, also, just found a pictorial or a picture of Bugs Bunny's evolution. So,
Bugs Bunny's first appearance was in the 40s. The first episode he was in was called A Wild Hare.
Okay.
It originally released on July 27th, 1940. Considered the first official Bugs Bunny cartoon.
Yes. What was the name of that one again?
Wild Hare.
Oh, yes. Yes, I see it.
And the animator was Virgil Ross.
Ah. That's cute. Yeah, that was definitely the old phase, and as you can see from the picture, he's definitely evolved. However, I think it was slightly later that year, they also had, which one was it? Elmer's Candid Camera. That was when he first met Elmer Fudd. And it's that combination of Bugs Bunny and Elmer Fudd who, in a way, I think are the archetype of Looney Tunes. And that's when his usual phrase, you know, what's up, Doc, came into being right about that time.
Yep.
Wild Hare and Candid Camera.
And some people might not know that Looney Tunes actually started in 1930. So Warner Brothers has been producing the cartoons for a very long time.
And I think it was the post-war era, just right towards the end of the war. I think was when the phase of Bugs Bunny that I got brought up on. We're talking about cartoons like, Baseball was a good one. Hair Tonic was another good one. And then you're starting to get into the combination, the cartoons where he was either associated with Elmer Fudd and or Daffy Duck, which we'll discuss in a little while. But that was cartoons like, you know, Rabbit Fire, Rabbit Seasoning, and Duck Rabbit Duck. Here it says it is often referred to as the Duck Season, Rabbit Season trilogy. And I just mentioned that, you got me into getting the Bugs Bunny cartoons on iTunes.
Yep.
Which has provided me with a source of amusement plenty of time when waiting to go into a lecture.
Yeah, they've also came out with a complete remastered edition of all the Golden Age Looney Tunes cartoons. They're all on Blu-ray.
Oh.
Yeah, so I'm trying to remember the name of the collection they came out with. Let me look this up real quick. I've got one of them, actually. I just don't...
So I'm assuming you're looking for the DVD?
Yep. So the ones... There's two of them, actually. There's the Looney Tunes Golden Collection, which came out in 2003.
Okay.
And that was on DVD. And then the newest one, which came out last fall, is Looney Tunes Platinum Collection Volume 1 on Blu-ray. Mm. And you can get it for $46.93 on Amazon Prime.
Mm. Okay. I've got the Looney Tunes Complete Golden Collection Volumes 1 through 6. And of course, I'm on Amazon UK. There's the Golden Collection 3. There's the Big Faces Box Set, which came out in 2011. And, yes. Now, the Complete Golden Collection 1 through 6, available for, I can't get them on Blu-ray, it looks like. But for DVD, it's £30.75. That's the best I could do so far.
Now, was that for Volume 1, or...?
That's not for all six DVDs. So it's a box set of six six DVDs.
In the Golden Collection, though, there are actually six volumes.
Oh, volumes.
So you're looking at Volume 1.
Volumes 1 through 6.
Yeah.
For £30.
That's not possible.
It says it right.
They list them individually here for $40 a piece, US.
Interesting. What, each volume?
Yep.
That's really interesting because we've got them here. It's not Blu-ray, but it's just DVD.
Yep. The Platinum Collection is the Blu-ray edition.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't have the, I can't find the Platinum Collection, but just the Complete Golden Collection, volumes 1 through 6, £30.75. Which is about $45, $50. Now, the only thing is...
Okay, Sydney, I found the same thing. Looney Tunes Golden Collection, volumes 1 through 6, in one big box set for $100 US.
Jeez. That's interesting. Because, like I said, the only problem is, I wouldn't be able to get a US copy and play it over here on my computer. Because I've gotten my drive configured to UK.
It's because you're ass backwards over there.
It's a different DVD region. It's
yeah.
Stupid bloody proprietary thing. I don't know why. I don't know how. And it's annoying as all sin. Now, getting back to the spiel. Where were we? It was post post 1964 when. Departed Freeling Enterprises took over basically producing the cartoons. And in general, compared to the immediate post-war, I would say that the quality, I think, kind of went down a little bit. It just didn't feel quite like the same, to be honest with you.
Yeah, the 70s, the era, the animation style completely changed. The episodes were still good, but they were missing something from the shorts that they did in the 60s and the 50s.
Mm. There was a certain magic that was missing. Well, Bugs Bunny didn't appear in a lot of the Patty Freeling cartoons, but on that level, since we were mentioning Wile E. Coyote briefly before we started recording, it's an example of the animation going, to pot was... an example of the Departed Freeling animation being of a lesser quality or a lesser magic. Take a look at Wile E. Coyote from the previous, post World War II era when Wile E. Coyote first came about. Compare one of those cartoons, like say Fast and Furious, with any of the newer ones that Departed Freeling put out, and you can definitely see that there's a certain something just not there. Because you mentioned how the style of animation had changed.
Yep.
I think it was a lot of drawing the characters. They appear to be slightly different. It just, the only way of explaining it would be just for people to get, say, if they can find Fast and Furious, which is one of the old Looney Tunes shorts, and then put it up against a Departed Freeling Coyote cartoon. And you'd see what I'm talking about.
I don't know. I'd say most people our age, in your late 30s, remember watching Looney Tunes back in the 70s, early 80s.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's kind of hard to put into words without actually watching the episodes. But, I think Warner Brothers made such better cartoons during that time period, especially compared to Disney, just because they had so many wacky characters that basically beat the hell out of each other.
Yeah.
In which they had issues with parents' rights or parents' groups that wanted to get rid of violence in cartoons. So for a long time, some of the episodes never even saw air on TV. So,
well, if I remember hearing it, it was a number of years ago, and I think this was when I was still in the States, and I could have sworn I heard something, maybe it was even by Mel Blanc, stating that originally the cartoons weren't even for kids.
Right. Yeah, because when they were first made, they were shorts in the movie theaters.
Mm.
So they were never actually intended to be seen in homes. They were intended to be seen before the beginning credits or before the show started in the theaters.
Mm. So kind of like a trailer.
Yep. Well, they weren't really a trailer. They were standalone shorts that were made specifically for theater audiences.
Mm.
Which is the reason why you saw so many cartoons that were prominently with stereotypical black characters or Japanese characters during the war.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Which you will, if you are, have any chance of trying to find any of those nowadays, I would say good luck, because I don't think you'll ever be able to find them again.
Well, you won't. I think they've been consigned to the dustbin of history because they're just too blatantly racist.
Yeah.
Which in a way is both sad but true. One character that, before we get on to Wile E. Coyote, because Coyote reminds me of myself so much, another character that almost reminds me of me, and you know from growing up around me, I think Yosemite Sam would be a good day.
I would say normally you're Wile E. Coyote, and when you're pissed off, you're Yosemite Sam.
I couldn't have said it better myself. Because, I mean, Yosemite Sam is just, well, besides the wild hair like me, Yosemite Sam is just, not as, I don't know if crooked would be the right word. I don't think corrupt, because I think just crooked in general. And he tries to, especially in the Bugs Bunny cartoons, he tries to get the upper hand and continuously fails. But he's so funny the way he does it, and his little temper tantrums are just absolutely priceless.
Well, and it depends on when you watched him too, because early in his career he was the rough and tumble villain who was mm-hmm. always out to mess with Bugs or Daffy. But mm-hmm. in later episodes they actually kind of pulled it back a little bit and kind of showed more of Sam's sensitive side, where he wasn't necessarily being a bad guy, he was just misunderstood. So, and it's interesting if you actually watch kind of the chronologically from his, you know, earliest episodes to more recent ones, how they've changed the character and made him more likable, as opposed to being just a straight-out villain.
Mm. The ones that I think typified for me, Yosemite Sam, and I've got, since I'm browsing through the titles in my collection on my iPhone, in the first series, well, it wasn't really much in the first series with Yosemite Sam. We're getting into volume two. The first one that really did it for me, that got me into it, was Barbary Coast Bunny, where he was more of a pirate.
Yep, that's a good one.
Let's see what else. Another, and this is getting into series three. This volume three had a bunch of them. Buccaneer Bunny was basically the same general principle as Barbary Coast Bunny. Another good one, this was actually kind of, was a complete piss take of the Revolutionary War, Bunker Hill Bunny. And that in a way was actually one of the funniest ones, because in that one, Yosemite Sam was a Hessian trooper supposed to be from Germany. He was known as Sam von Schmamm. And that was one of the first cartoons I'd ever seen that actually made me hurt my sides from laughing. It was priceless. Because instead of like the battle of like Lexington or Concord or Yorktown or Bunker Hill, it was the Battle of Bagel Heights.
Jeez.
And you just have to watch it to get it. Eventually, somehow, they ended up on the same side as the it was fading to black at the end. But more often than not, it was a constant tug of war between those two. And another one that typifies that is Ballot Box Bunny, where he actually is the mayor, campaigning to be the mayor of a town, and one of his promises is to rid the country of every last rabbit. And that basically sets Box Bunny off on his campaign, and it becomes basically a comedy of errors. Sam tries to sabotage a picnic with picnic ants, and Bugs booby traps one of the melons, and basically blows up Sam. And
which one was it where they were in the two separate forts in the desert and they were legionnaires?
Ooh, I know which one you're talking about.
Oh, that one! I always love that one because Sam shoots a cannon, and so Bugs runs across with his cannon and catches the cannonball and shoots it back to him.
Hmm. I've seen it before as well. Damned if I know the name of it.
I wish I could remember because that episode is hilarious.
Cut list of Bugs Bunny cartoons. I'm going to see if this can... Ah, here we go. I wonder if this will work. See, I've just found a list, Wikipedia list of all the Bugs Bunny cartoons from the beginning. I wonder when it was, what year it was, because then...
I would say probably in the 50s.
Okay. This is going to be an interesting one. Hmm. That's the one. Sahara Hare, I think it is.
Sounds familiar.
He's thinking he's in Miami Beach. He's actually in the Sahara Desert. And, and that was when he, one of the ones typically where he should have taken that left turn at Albuquerque. I think so. Yep. Sam riding on a camel suddenly comes on Bugs' tracks. He's like, "Great horny toads, a trespasser getting footy prints all over my desert." He chases after Bugs, who goes into a French Foreign Legion post. And I think that's... This has got to...
Yep, that's the one.
Is that that's probably the side splitter for you, eh?
Yeah, as far as Bugs cartoons go, that one's probably one of my favorites. To be perfectly honest, anything that has Daffy in it is pretty much a gold star episode for me, because I am Daffy Duck.
In some respects, I could see that, but at the same time, you're ethical. But Daffy Duck was just trying to make a quick buck or do anything quick to save his own skin.
I always looked at him just from the wackiness side of it.
Just from the complete Looney Tunes?
Yeah. You know, okay. His bouncing around doing the woo-woo.
Mm-hmm. Well, I figured that was just from all the Mountain Dew you drank.
Well, that's part of it, yes.
Ah.
like this one right here.
You're scraping it?
Well, I'm pretty sure it recorded, but you didn't hear it.
What, you farted?
No, I had... you can hear it because it's in my headset, not on the speakers. But it's on the recording. It's Daffy doing his woohoo.
Okay. Okay.
I just
cool.
realized my speakers were off.
Let me see. Now I can't remember. Let's see. We've covered Yosemite, Sam. Some of Daffy's cartoons were good. One of the ones I really did like, and this was. I suppose typecast Daffy is completely hapless, in a way conniving, was Showbiz Bugs, where they're basically, you know, stage performers doing like a little chorus line show, and then they're trying to do their own little bits. And Daffy, in his huge burst of ego, basically thinks he's completely it, so to speak. And he's trying too hard, and Bugs is just being himself and succeeding, and that really grates on Duffy. But then they had a slightly different relationship when they did, you know, the Duck Season, Rabbit Season trilogy.
Yep.
Because they were both getting nailed by Elmer Fudd. So in a way it was just interesting to watch those. Now, there's one of that trilogy, I don't know which one it is, but Daffy's basically saying stuff like, if he's a duck, then, because he tried to dress up, Bugs tried to dress up as a duck to kind of foil Elmer, which, being Elmer, wasn't difficult. And he does a duck, and Daffy has one of his rants, he's like, "Are you nuts? If he's a duck, then I'm a mongoose!" And Bugs holds up a mongoose season sign, and basically, Daffy looks at towards the audience. It's like, "And that again," and let's have it.
Yeah, my favorite Daffy episodes are when him and Porky were doing the parodies of movies.
Mm-hmm.
We had Robin Hood Daffy, where obviously Daffy was Robin Hood and Porky Pig was Friar Tuck.
With
the legendary training with the bow staff and hitting himself in the bill all the time.
Mm-hmm. Which one did you say that was?
Robin Hood Daffy from 1958. And everybody's classic, the one that spawned the TV series in the 90s, Duck Dodgers in the 24th and a Half Century.
Ah, yes.
Obvious that, parody of Buck Rogers.
Yes. Now, that just in itself was just so corny it was funny.
Well, and of course, yeah, without that, they wouldn't have made the Duck Dodgers TV series, which then they never would have done Green Lantern, which is, of course, my online persona.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Well, let's see.
I love Marvin, too. Marvin the Martian.
Yes. Oh, you know, I've just noticed, while we're on the subject of Daffy Duck cartoons, remember how we used to, I think when we were younger, we'd always do something like, you know, hug him, squeeze him, kiss him, love him, name him George. I found this cartoon that spawned that, The Abominable Snow Rabbit.
Yep.
That one, I don't know if I can adequately explain in words. That's one of those you just have to... Just look it up, because it's just when he gets captured by the abominable snowman, Daffy Duck's got a shirt on, and he the sleeves are the snowman mistakes Daffy for a rabbit because of the sleeves being out of place. So he basically says, "Oh no, these are sleeves," and that is when the daft thing about it. Is just how the snowman says, "Oh, George, you're bad to pretend you're a bunny rabbit. I'll punish you good." He's fighting so hard, and Daffy's neck is extending every time he gets hit. I suppose the word is inanity, like stupidity and corniness, that just made everything with Bugs Bunny, for me, just perfect. And I guess I can't really say much more than that. But the only other thing is I just wish iTunes had come out with another Bugs Bunny collection soon.
Yeah. You know, the Golden Age stuff, which is the stuff that we remember best, actually ended in, like, 1962? Is that right? That's
62 or 64, I think. Because that was about the time that DePatie and Freeling, again, took it over.
Well, I thought, yeah, didn't Chuck Jones come back with Tex Avery in the 70s? Why am I not remembering?
Well, this, let's see. I'm looking down the list of cartoons, and I notice a couple of them, like from 62, starting in 62, actually, in 66, it started in 61, a lot of them were being done by, a lot of them had been done by Merry Melodies, and Looney Tunes of the past, but you can see like Sam McKimson and Fritz Freeling having more of a role in it. And I think that's, I'm looking at this now, and then there's another one, possibly an animator, I'm not sure, Phil Monroe. But yeah, it was right about that time, early 60s, that I think that's when a lot of the magic went out of it, with the exception of some of the, one or two of them, like Marvin the Martian cartoons and a few others. But I would have to say generally, a lot of them, it just changed style is the best way of saying it. And, oh, here's another one. No, I guess that was from earlier. Chuck Jones, I'm seeing, he only did one cartoon in 1960, it looked like, or one Bugs Bunny cartoon. And then he did a few more in 61. Didn't do anything in 62, it looks like. A couple in 63 and none in 64. And I think, let's see, there was something that did Warner Brothers take over the studio or something, or did they sell? Yeah.
Well, the studio had always been owned by Warner Brothers.
But I think they kind of, did I hear something about them selling the studio or something like that, or?
No, I'm pretty sure Warner Brothers had always owned Looney Tunes.
Well, they'd owned it, but how did it, the point I'm trying to make, if there is one, is the production of it.
Well, Metro Goldwyn Mayer They were the production company that actually had the studio.
Okay. Schlesinger, and then Warner Brothers, and then DePatie Freeland Enterprises, and then Format Films. Yes. Ah, here we go. There's a bit more of the... During part of the 60s, the shorts were produced by DePatie Freeland Enterprises after Warner Brothers shut down their animation studios. The shorts from this era can be identified by the fact that they open with a different title sequence featuring stylized limited animation and graphics on a black background and a rearranged version of the merry-go-round broke down.
Oh, okay.
Another noticeable difference in these shorts was the absence of Bugs Bunny, Tweety Bird, and there were several other starring characters, while Daffy Duck, Speedy Gonzales, Wile E. Coyote, and the Roadrunner continued to be featured. But you could tell that it wasn't the same.
Well, the other side of that too, that same studio with DePatie Freeling Enterprises, their most significant addition to the animation world was the Pink Panther.
Ah, yes.
So you can definitely see the style between their Looney Tunes stuff and then as they transitioned over to the Pink Panther.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
That was in 1964 when they started doing those.
Which one? The Pink Panther?
Yep. Yeah. The Inspector, the Ant, and the Aardvark.
Ah, yes. Now, that was, in a way, the Ant and the Aardvark was a law into itself, if that's the right way of saying it.
Oh, interesting little side note that you probably didn't know. Did you know that the Freeling Studio also was credited with creating the Frito-Lay's Chester Cheetah?
Really?
Yep.
Was it kind of a spot off of the Pink Panther, do you think?
A good possibility.
Because, I mean, you could see some sort of superficial resemblance in them.
I'd have to go back and look at the original ads from the 70s to see what the differences are, but between the modern one, which is all CG.
Hmm. Well, even from the 80s, because... this is just after I moved over to the United States, I remember seeing a few of the old Cheetos commercials, and he was more of an 80s cool cat, if that sounded right.
Yep.
Now, I don't know what he was like in the 70s when he first came out, or if he first was created, but he just, thinking about it now, I could definitely see some sort of like general resemblance, superficial definitely, to the Pink Panther if you think about it. But, I suppose if you do a comparison, get like a still image of the Pink Panther and one of Chester Cheetah, and you might be able to see some of it.
Yeah, that's true. Another cool little bit of info that I just found out.
What's that?
In 1980, they sold DePatie Freeling Studios to Marvel Comics, who renamed it Marvel Productions, which then they started working on things like Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends. And, it's pretty cool. I did not know that.
Hmm. Yeah, I can see that. Licensing and ownership. Ah, good. This gets bloody complicated.
And obviously, Looney Tunes went on to spawn more Looney Tunes. In the 90s, we had Tiny Toons.
Ah, yes.
Which were the baby versions.
Tiny Toons, I liked. I think you got me into the Tiny Toons as well.
Well, yeah, I've always been a big, huge animation nut, so yeah, Tiny Toons was always fun. And then more recently, we've got the Looney Tunes show, which is on Cartoon Network right now.
Uh-huh.
Bugs and Daffy are roommates, and Speedy Gonzales owns the pizza shop in town.
Uh-huh.
And Babs Bunny is dating Bugs.
Uh-huh.
And Daffy has a girlfriend too. I don't remember what her name is. Oh, it's not Babs Bunny, it's Lola. They call her Lola.
Interesting.
But I wasn't sure about that when they came out with it. You know, because the last one they had a few years ago where they made a horrible attempt at a Looney Tunes superhero cartoon where, you know, Bugs, Daffy, and Wile E. Coyote and Roadrunner all had superpowers.
Oh, boy.
It was the most horrible thing I've ever seen.
It sounds actually quite sacrilegious.
Yeah, it was really bad. But this one, I was a little apprehensive when it first came out a couple of years ago, but it's really funny. You know, I was thinking that they were going to make it kind of a sitcom of a reality show where they all lived in a stupid house sort of thing, but luckily that wasn't what it was at all. Daffy basically lives rent-free in Bugs' house, and crazy antics ensue. So if you get a chance to catch any of the Looney Tunes show, you should definitely watch it. It's worth it.
Yeah. Remember how I mentioned that some of the original, a few of the Looney Tunes ones during the war were a little bit, you know, racist and all of that?
Yep.
just did a little checking. We found a couple of, several of the cartoons that were, there's a censored 11 list.
Oh yeah.
I just found it. Now two of them were done, one of them was done 31, one's done 36, but they start going from like 37 down. There's one called they go down as number 3 is Clean Pastures, number 4 Uncle Tom's Bungalow, number 5 Jungle Jitters, 6th Island of Pingo Pongo, All This and Rabbit Stew, Coal Black and His Seven Dwarfs, Tin Pan Alley Cats, Angel Puss and Goldilocks and the Jiving Bears. They all, basically they did some pretty wretched portrayals of the black community. And two other ones that were very, how should we see, several of them that were actually anti-Japanese, and definitely for World War II. Bugs Bunny Nips the Nips, Tokyo Jokyo, which I've just kind of told you about. And let me see, what else do we have? Let's see. Popeye cartoons definitely did a lot of that. But that's basically the list of the Looney Tunes stuff, was on Looney Tunes Merry Melodies, that was basically pulled out of circulation.
Yep.
It was actually interesting, you know, because we did do a passing reference to Speedy Gonzales. And I was reading down, and apparently in 1999, all Speedy Gonzales cartoons were pulled from circulation. Now, apparently, I'm reading the article, and it seemed like a lot of Mexicans and Mexican-Americans actually counter-protested, because they said it was he was indicative of some of their culture and their identity. So apparently, several years later, they actually put them back into circulation.
Well, once again, that's that same problem where you have somebody who gets a bug up their sleeve and says, well, obviously this is racist and that's the way they intended it, so we can't allow anybody to watch it without actually finding out if people actually did consider it racist.
Well, some people did complain about it, but funny thing is, it's interesting because if it did turn out to be racist, it wasn't intentional. Now, things like the Censored 11 and the anti-Japanese cartoons, those were
Right. Really
racist. So one could get into a political grey area there. But that's basically the history of the censored cartoons. Now, I don't know if they're available anymore, but I think Looney Tunes might, or Merry Melodies might have done them. It was featuring, some of them featured Sylvester the Cat. It was a series of 5 or 6 cartoons, I think, called The Honourable House of Hashimoto, in which Hashimoto was a Japanese mouse. And you don't see them anymore.
Nope, you don't. Well, you know, it's kind of a shame, because I understand why they banned these cartoons, but for a historical reference point, I think people need to see these, just because, you know, take it in the context of when they were made and what they were trying to do at the time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you wanted to look at it as the social climate was at the time, how the world was perceived, how people perceived certain people of a different race, you know, I mean, yeah, I mean, some of the stuff is pretty horrible, you know, depending on how you look at it. But it's worth watching just to kind of understand what things were like. Because, you know, right now everything, and for quite a few years, has been so politically correct, you're not even allowed to, you know, people don't even want you to think about stuff like that. But I think it's important that you should go back and look at this and realize, you know, what it was for when it was produced.
Yes. And I suppose in that respect, that was one of the reasons why a lot of the Bugs Bunny and especially like Daffy Duck and Wile E. Coyote characters appealed to me, because it was very neutral and there was no way, besides the cartoon violence, there was no source of controversy with it.
Right.
And it was interesting because, you know, how, like, especially like Wile E. Coyote and Yosemite Sam just never succeed in catching their antagonist, in this case, whether it be the Roadrunner or Bugs Bunny. But they keep trying, and in a way that's a very motivational thing, kind of hearkening to, if at first you don't succeed, try and try again. But it's just it was just, in that respect, it was interesting to think of the, you know, they're continuously trying, they're trying, and they're not getting anywhere. Well, some might think of that as a waste of time, but it was just funny to see the schemes they were trying to come up with to catch him.
Well, and I don't know about you, but when I was growing up, my dad loved Looney Tunes.
Mm.
You know, he watched this stuff when he was a kid. So, but he knew the cartoons from going to movies and stuff like that. And so when I was growing up, every Saturday morning, Dad would make sure that we were sitting down and we'd watch the Three Stooges on Sunday mornings, and on Saturday mornings we would watch Looney Tunes. So technically, for all the crap my dad gives me for, you know, watching stupid crap like animation and other cartoons, he's actually responsible for it. So whether he wants to admit it or not.
But knowing your dad, do you think he ever will admit it?
No. No, he won't. All right. Well, I think that should do it for the show this week. Thanks again for listening. Good night, everybody.
Good night. It's good night from me, and it's good night from him.
All right. Perfect. All right. Thank you, sir. I think this one worked a lot better than last time, so I should have plenty of audio for the show. So.
Okay. Excellent. Now, I was just thinking, do you ever still do any of the stuff with Sid the Anarchist Bee?
Yeah, he still gets sketched every once in a while.
You know what, I'm wondering if maybe, as a side bit of animation, one of the next times that we do a contribution, you should start going into Sid the Anarchist Bee, because I always remember him fondly in the last 2 years of high school. I just remember that.
Well, we could maybe do a short one as a...
Behold the wizard, beware his powers, unspeakable powers, under the gaze of the necromancer, a silver
dim light of the dream realm's black sun, the wizard climbs the frozen waterfall of Voldrini in search of Celestia, the guardian of infinite power. When suddenly a terrible Garlon appears and attacks with ice, but the wizard is undeterred. The Garlon roars and unleashes the most sinister wind, but the wizard is undeterred. The Garlon summons the stones of Prothenia, but the wizard is undeterred. Calling upon the powers of the ancient, the wizard conjures the sacred fire and casts his foe into the molten maw of an insatiable Gort. Thanks, Gort.
Ah, Celestia. I think you're going to enjoy this.
The wizard stands on the precipice of ultimate power. The gates open to reveal...
Whew! How long was I asleep? 3 days. You have a bed, you know. I'm starving. I gotta get something to eat.